Okay, so now I'll just begin. So you see, when Socrates were there, Socrates, Plato, at that time people were not called scientists. They were philosophers. Philosophy and science and spirituality was one. People never distinguished between these three fields. And same is with Vedas. But as after Dark Ages, Enlightenment, Renaissance, Newton, Einstein, then what happened? Science, just like an onion, you have many peels. One subject divided into three: science, philosophy, and spirituality. Three branches. And why three branches? Because science said, I am the queen and I have the power. I have rationality and logic. Whatever you can't, whatever is something abstract, leave it to philosophy. Whatever is more abstract, leave it to spirituality. That's what these three fields came. But what I'm going to show today is science, spirituality, and philosophy cannot be dissected. They must go together if at all we want to become happy and we want satisfaction in life. Only science cannot give you just happiness. It is a materialistic perspective. Only spirituality, that also cannot give happiness. It can lead to terrorism, fanaticism, and it's going on. It's a major problem. It should be clubbed together. Everybody wants to become happy. Everybody wants to avoid distress. That's what life is for. But how to do that? I think we are so much into matter and music and then money that we have forgotten that what we are aiming for. We want these things for what? For happiness? But we have forgotten the goal of achieving these things and we are just entangled into these small stuff. So after this seminar, what you will know is, what I'm going to show you is, I'm going to tell you many things, but to come to the point of synthesis of spirituality and science, I have to tell you many other things before we conclude to that point. Okay. So 200 years back something happened in India and in the entire world. And what happened was East India Company. And this was to do with colonization. And these were the people who were the, you can call, generals of colonization, especially in India. And they came to India and they did probably something cunning thing. They translated Vedas, especially Max Muller. You have in if you go to Delhi, there's a Max Muller Bhavan where Max Muller has translated all Vedas, but their intentions were wrong. The intentions were to conquer India by mistranslating their education, by mistranslating their books, and then to exploit them. This is history, everybody knows. But is this truth? Is this truth? If this is truth, then what's the result? Result is this modern times, modern age, where nobody believes in Vedas. Vedas is a mythology. It's no longer a scientific thing. But if it is truth, our paradigm and perspectives will change. Our focus will change. And it will give rise to wisdom and not just knowledge. It will give rise to realizations and not just information. And that can make us happy and satisfied. So let's have a look on the what's there in Vedas. Now, we have to keep in mind that Vedas are around 3,000 years back, according to modern historical accounts. 3,000 years back, Vedas were there. Aryans and all those stuff, you all know this thing. These are books which are claimed to be Hindu scriptures, like what people claim like that. And these were written by Aryans who came to India And I'm not going into that theory. But the point is that these are the oldest sacred texts on this planet. Even before all, even Bible, Quran, or any other text, Japanese, Chinese religion, all texts, Vedas are the oldest. This is the roughly the date. This will come around, I think, around 2700, 3000 years back. 3000 years back, please note this point, that there was no Socrates. There was no Aristotle. If there's no Aristotle, there's no science. Because legacy of science starts with Aristotle. Isn't everybody knows that? And then if there's no Aristotle, there's no Newton, there's no Einstein. There's nobody. And these people, 3000 years back, they had Vedas. And what was there in Vedas? What was there? Let me tell you what was there. These were written in Sanskrit. Sanskrit. And Sanskrit is not, it's the most difficult language to understand. And speak, of course. Why difficult? Because Chinese is also difficult. It's difficult, yeah. Because Chinese also, meanings are compressed into diagrams of. Chinese is a pictorial language, isn't it? What about Sanskrit? Sanskrit also, meanings are compressed into one word. One word has many meanings. Many meanings. I'll show you how. And in those Sanskrit words, which were, according to Max Muller and E.C. Their company, which were just some blabbering and mutterings of some tribal people, according to them, it was not something intellectually evolved. Because according to their theories, if there is culture, there is culture in those regions where there is light. You understand? If you go on Google, there's light, you can see lightnings in America. People think that is cultured countries. If you get lightnings on Google, that place is cultured. But it's not like that. It's not like that. So we are talking about knowledge. Vedas means knowledge. The word Veda means knowledge. It comes from the root vid, to know. So we are talking about books which are 3000 years old. There's no possibility of science according to modern perspective. According to modern theories, these people are tribals. Keep in mind, they don't know even how to speak. They know how to speak, but it's, according to them, it's Proto-Indo-European language, some kind of language, people say. But what they have in their books, we don't know. I think probably we say religion, spirituality, philosophy is just, people think it's just blind faith or something superstition. No, people think like that, Hindu or all these things. But I think if you really think about it, actually we are superstitious. Without even reading these books, we assume that these books are mythology. That's assumption, isn't it? People don't read these books because they can't have access. Only few Sanskrit scholars in the entire world, they can have access to these books. Whatever they speak, that's okay. But we assume that this is all some stupid baggage. And whatever is presented to us, that is true. That is true, but that is half-truth. Keep in mind. So what's there? Let's have a quick look in Vedas, in Sanskrit. What's logged in Sanskrit? So I'm giving the evidence of how Vedas are scientific. There is science in Vedas. Okay, this is all knowledge can be compressed into 14 vidyas and 64 kalas. All knowledge, whatever you have now, it's coming from 14 subjects, knowledge, 14 subjects, and 64 skills. That's all. For example, these are 14 branches of knowledge in Vedas. And I'll discuss all these in just a minute. So computers is coming from Vyakarana. That might be shocking for you. Oh, who is computer science here? Oh, good. Did they tell you? Computer is coming from Sanskrit? No, isn't it? I'll tell you. Did they tell? No? Yeah, see. They'll not tell. But Chomsky, I'll come to him. You all know Chomsky, huh? He's the father of computer language. He I'll quote him and you'll see how computers is coming from Sanskrit. Poetry, physics, architecture, philosophy, mathematical laws, history, logic, medicine, chemistry, biology, economics, defense, dance and film. Everything is coming from Vedas. These are all Sanskrit names for this. Shiksha, Vyakran, Niruk, Chhan, Jyotish, Kalp, Mimamsa, Sutra, Puran, Nyaya, Ayurveda, Arsha, Dhanurveda, Gandharved. What else? You can, if you read English, what else is there? Is there anything left? Any branch of knowledge? All are covered, no? This is what is a modern society. You have defense, you have entertainment, you have economics, politics, social laws, you have medicine, and you have other things. And then you have beauty parlors. In 3000 years back, people think they were tribals, they were living in jungles, and they were have mud, and they were smelling like... But this is called Shekhar Kriya. You know one book, Kama Sutra? Have everybody heard that in America? Yeah. Have you heard, all of you, Kama Sutra? It's like, it's known for, maybe some for wrong things. But in hippie culture, it was quite, that was the book they had, Kama Sutra from India. But actually, if you read Kama Sutra, Kama Sutra is talking about many skills. So beauty parlor, there is detailed description of beauty parlor. You think it's a modern invention? No. This is all facial, I don't know the names. I don't go to beauty parlor, but is there all his hairstyles, waxing, and all these techniques are coming from Vedic scriptures. They used to do that at that time. Fashion designing, nepathyam, carpentry, tattooing, that's famous. Hair, it's coming from Vedic scriptures. People used to tattoo at that time. Child care, cooking, the art of cooking, magic, Indrajal. This is quite interesting. This is just, I'm just talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 skills. There are 64 skills. Chess is there. Basketball. You might think it's a modern thing. It's coming from Europe. It's coming from India. People used to play basketball there. There's baseball. It is nothing to do with Europe. You know, Americans are crazy about baseball, isn't it? Well, it is there in India. It was there back in India. All that is why Vedas are called Veda. Veda means whatever knowledge you can imagine and you cannot imagine, that's there in these books. It is there. How these are there, I'm going to show you. Just a sample. I can just give a course here. And by the way, I've started a college back in India in Kurukshetra, Vedic Revival College and Research Center. So I'm the director of that. And there, all these things will be teaching to people. It will take around 1 month course to teach them, okay, fashion designing, if you go in details from scriptures and all those. So mathematics, they're in Vedas. Okay, do you know? This everybody knows. You know Pythagoras? Everybody knows? No talk. 570 BC. This is one Rishi, Bodhayan Rishi, 800 BC. He wrote a book. According to Atharved. And his book, the name of this book is Sulva Sutra. Sulva means ropes. Rope. Have you learned calculus? How much time it takes to learn calculus? A lot of time, isn't it? And it's difficult also. Some people really can't make it. And but if you read this book, Sulva Sutra, Vodhayan Rishi is talking about calculus. And you can learn from this technique, calculus, in 3 days. 3 days. I'm not joking, because there's one scientist, Professor C.K. Raju. I had a meeting with him back in India. He's a mathematician. He just got a Nobel Prize or what, in mathematics something. He has written a book, 11 Pictures of Time. You can read that. You can Google that and read that. 11 Pictures of Time. And in that, he's going all around the world and talking about Sulva Sutras, how you can learn mathematics in 3-4 days, or maximum 1 week. He gives courses all around the world. And how he teaches calculus, you know how? In tradition, how they used to teach? Not by formulas, but by ropes. And that's a good way. Because sine theta is... Okay, fine. For example, hypotenuse upon base or something like that. I forgot. Cos theta is this. So if you learn through ropes and diagrams, it's very easy to enter that. Some pictorial thing. Not just formulas. And that was a very good technique. There are four books in Vedas: Sulva Sutra, Dharma Sutra, Kalpa Sutra, and Grahya Sutra. You don't need to get these names. But this, specifically this book, is talking about mathematics. Not only trigonometry, not only calculus. Oh, you thought calculus was invented by whom? Who found calculus? Newton? We thought that? Yeah. Isn't it? Maths teacher, is it okay? Yeah, that's fine. Do you agree? Okay, fine. But it's there in Vedas, 3,000 years back. Calculus, trigonometry. And I'll tell you how Newton and Einstein, all these great scientists, got an idea from India, how these knowledge got transported from India to Europe, how it happened. Okay, this was quite good. Pythagoras, it's there in Vedas. This is the verse in Sanskrit for Pythagoras. This is Pythagoras' theorem, simple. Diagonal of a rectangle produces by itself both the areas produced separately by its two sides. Simple, a square plus b square plus c square, that's Pythagoras. This is the Sanskrit for that. And I think University of New South Wales, Australia, John F. Price, School of Mathematics. He did some research on this, on Vedas and mathematics. You can Google him. He has written some papers, go into details. And according to him, this system of understanding Pythagorean theorem, according to Vedic scriptures, that's more easy rather than modern system. This is quite revealing. And then not only Pythagoras' theorem. Oh, Rig Veda. 10th chapter, 10th mandal. This is called mandal in Sanskrit. 10th chapter, 138th section and third verse talks about prama, paridhi, pratima. You know what is this? Prama means circumference. Paridhi and pratima means area. And paridhi means radius. These concepts, circumference, area, it is very common. Now it's usual, you know, you may say, what's a big thing? Circumference. But it's a big concept. A circle itself is a magic. It's a magic. If you go in mathematics, it's nice. I think you'll agree with me, isn't it? It's great. Some people say mathematics is the language of God. That's how he has made this word. Mathematical principles. But it's right there in Rig Veda. They're talking about circles. They're talking about series of odd numbers. Now, this series of odd numbers, that's important in physics. In various laws, you need series of odd numbers. 1, 3, 5. Yajurved talks about powers of tens and zeros. Tens to the 10, tens to the 1,000 or something like that. And zero, of course, everybody knows zero comes from India, from Vedas, that we know. Decimal systems, that's there in Vedas. Multiplication, fractions, the concept of infinity. And the value of pi. Pi itself is mysterious, you know. Pi, 3 point, tick, 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 tick. Like, to conceive a word as pi, it needs some kind of, I don't know how you get to that conclusion. Pi is this. How do you get to that? It is an axiomatic thing, you know. Pi is this. You can't derive that. But that's there in Vedas. That concept is there, that conceptualization. And then geometry is there, Euclidean, non-Euclidean geometry. That's there in Vedas. There's a book, Surya Siddhant, which is 2000 BC. Oh, this is great. 2000 BC means 4,000 years back, around. And it's from this is from Atharva Veda, which contains a rational system of trigonometry. He's a professor, Professor A.R. Wallis. He was a British naturalist. He came to India. He got hold of Vedas. He read it and then he found, my God, Vedas are such a deep philosophical scientific system. Who found Euclidean geometry? Anybody knows? Non-Euclidean Euclidean geometry. Who was founder? Oh, you forgot all this? Anyway, that's okay. But whatever it is, it was there. The seeds of knowledge were there in Vedas. Okay, this is about mathematics, isn't it? Modern mathematics is arithmetic, algebra, geometry, trigonometry, calculus. Calculus, trigonometry, yeah, it's all the same. Yeah. But this is about modern mathematics. But all these branches are there in Vedas. These are Sanskrit names for that. You don't need to know, but I'm just showing the Sanskrit names in Vedas. Anganit, Bijganit, Rekhaganit, Trikon Ganit, Ekikaran Sanghatan. Oh, so this calculus is actually referring to permutation and combinations. Trigonometry, permutation and combinations. So, this is Ekikaran Sanghatan. And then in mathematics, you have quadratic equations, differential equations. This is all coming in this field, Ekikaran Sanghatan. And this was given by Aryabhatta, Bhaskaracharya, who were referring Vedas and getting all the knowledge from there. Okay, this is Elphinstein. There's a book, History of India. Just Google it, take that book. It's a very good book, History of India. And he says that, you can just have a look. This book, Surya Siddhant, which is talking about mathematics 3,000 years back, it goes far beyond anything known to the Greeks. Far beyond them. But also involves theorems which were not discovered in Europe till 2 centuries ago. That's about mathematics. Physics. Have you heard about Rig Veda? There are 4 Vedas. Rig Veda, Sam, Yajur and Atharv. This is one of the books. And it talks about physics. Okay, let me ask you one thing. Oh, this is a section of Rig Veda, Brahma Tark. If you go to Karnataka, India, there's a school, Madhva school. So I've been there. I was talking to Sanskrit scholars there. The problem is, those people who are studying Vedas, they don't know modern system. They don't know English. So they can't convey this knowledge to European world, to West. And people who know modern knowledge, they don't know Sanskrit. And so it's a problem. That's why I put the name science and spirituality. You have to combine both. And then you can understand what's happening, you know. So this Brahma Tark, this is talking about all physical laws. Tarka means logic. Brahma means logic of cosmos. It's talking about laws of cosmos. Like for example, law of conservation of energy is there in Bhagavad Gita. Or you do that. Energy is neither created nor... Have you heard that? Who found that? Yeah, it's there in Bhagavad Gita. But I think we said Newton proposed that energy is neither created nor destroyed. 3 laws of motion and all these things. Is there in Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is like around 5,000 years back. You can imagine? 5,000 years back, we had law of conservation of energy. I'll just quickly tell you how it is there in this verse. This Sanskrit verse, this word you see, asat. Asat means non-existent. And bhavo, na bhavo means which doesn't exist. So, non-existence can never exist. And sata means existent. Existence will never exist. That means what is existing, it will always exist. What doesn't exist, it will never exist. What is this? Energy can neither be created. Energy is always there. What energy is not there, it is not there. What is there, it will always remain. So that's law of conservation of energy. In fact, yeah, I have a different seminar on Bhagavad Gita. There's so many. I'll just come to that point. Law of gravitation. Oh, this is, yeah. I'm talking about Newton again and again. Yeah, he's there. So, he gave law of gravitation, but anyway, it was there in Surya. It is there in Surya Siddhant, 800 years ago, before Newton. And they talks about law of gravitation here. F is equal to m1 m2 over r square. People know this? G and all this stuff. These all formulas are there. But it's written in Sanskrit. That's the idea. Gravitation in Sanskrit, it's called Sankarshan. That word is used. And how to calculate mass of planets. Everything is there in this book. But credit goes to Newton in Europe. But it's not like that. It's coming from Vedas, all knowledge. This book is translated into English. You can Google this. Get this book, Surya Siddhant. Have a look at this book. And you'll come to know how much detailed it is. Okay, astronomy. Astronomy is this from this book, Siddhant Shiromani. This is a part, this book is a part of Atharved. And here, it is talking about cosmology. You know Carl Sagan? Everybody? Yeah, people. He's a famous astronomer. He says Vedic cosmology is the only one in which time scales correspond to those in modern scientific cosmology. And Count Morris, Vedic cosmogony, which no European conception has ever surpassed. Even now, cosmologists refer to Vedas to understand the concepts of cosmology. Even today. But it's not taught. The problem is, it's not taught to students. Question is, why? Perhaps superiority or what? Or West is superior to east. I don't know what's behind that, but it's not there in the course books. It's not there. Why that's a point of research, but there's some kind of logic behind that, why it's like that, but it's quite unfortunate. Okay. This is British archaeologist at the time of East India Company. He came to India. He read all these books. And he told that mathematical science was so perfect, so complete, that path of sun and moon were accurately measured by Vedas. Even without telescopes. You can imagine? Without telescopes, they could calculate everything. How? And that is real science. By profession I was a doctor, and my brother is a physician in Boston. So I met him. So he told me that as a physician in America, if a person has pain in his finger, they'll do CT, they'll do full scan body. You know, they'll do all test. If there's one boil in your hand, you'll do all test. You know, blood test, urine test, all scanning and everything, CT scan, MRI scan. If you have small pain. But in India it doesn't happen like that. Indian physicians, we don't do all these things. We have predictive diagnosis. We don't do test. We see signs and symptoms and then predict a diagnosis by experience, by practice. And that is why Indian doctors are preferred to, because their training is little different. It's more of skills rather than machines and numbers. That's what is modern medicine, machine and numbers. You get, okay, urine is this much, bile is this much, HDL, LDL is this much, tuck. Okay, so according to these numbers, what's the diagnosis? No, it doesn't happen like that. You end up wasting money and so many things. It's more of experience. And these people were doing through experience and their skills and higher knowledge of Vedas. Okay, chemistry is there. You know this? You know what's this? Anybody knows? Anybody's in India? What's it? Qutub Minar. Yeah. This is a pillar. What do we say in English? The great pillar of India, something like this. Everybody's aware of Taj Mahal? Taj Mahal, yeah, isn't it? So this is one of the sights to see in Delhi. This was a pillar. And besides this, there's an iron pillar. And this is another view of that iron pillar. And you might say, that's okay. There's so many buildings in Detroit. GM building and, you know, what's that building you were saying? Renaissance building, isn't it? Yeah, I saw yesterday. So what's this pillar, you know how much height it is? 22 and a half, that's all. That's all. How much weight? Some kind of weight. But the specialty of that pillar is, this was built around 1600 years back. 1600 years back, much before science. And this, Muslims came, when Muslim invasion was there, Nadir Shah, there was a king, he came. He blasted it with a missile and nothing happened. Nothing happened. Missile could not blast it. And this pillar never rust. It's made of iron, there's no rust. There is no science with us which can make iron which doesn't rust. There's no science today. You have to use steel, isn't it? Or some other alloy. Pure iron, but never rust. How is it? That's great chemistry. That's good idea. This means if they can make a pillar like that, this means they had all processes, metallurgical processes, everything they should have, no? They should have, otherwise how can they make pillar? They should have a furnace, they should have extraction things. This is Yajurved. It mentions about gold, silver, copper, lead, tin. Tin is an alloy. And then it mentions about elements and alloys. They knew how to make alloys back 3,000 years back. Purification of metal is mentioned in Yajnavalkya Smriti. This is all Vedas, names of Vedas. Preparation of alloys, extraction of gold, pharmaceutical formulas. Everything is there in Vedas. And then how to make mirror, kacha. That's there. That is quite amazing, no? Till what time should we have to go on? It's 4 to? Seminar is from 4 to? 5? Okay. So these are modern terms in chemistry, extraction, purification, alloy, and this is Vedic chemistry. Maran, Shodhan, Bandhan. That's all. It's all the same. Words are different. They have translated into English and then we have chemistry, but it was there right in Vedic period. Biology. Who found cell? You know this cell? Who found this cell? Anyway. Is there. Robert Hooke, 1665, supposed to be founder of cell, is a unit of life. We know. But it's right there in Parashar Smriti. This Smriti is from Vedas. It's 2000 years old. It's talking about outer cell wall, cell membrane, cytoplasm, and it's talking that cell cannot be seen by eyes. This concept is there. It's not that we found cell in 1665 by person Robert Hooke and he saw in microscope and he found a cell. And the cell wall, cell membrane, these concepts are there in Parashar Smriti, right there. Medicine is there. Oh, this is great because I was a physician and I like this. This is book of medicine. This is book of surgery. Shushrut. Surgery was there. Anesthesia was there back 3,000 years back. Now, how do you do that? How do you anesthetize a person? You need a big setup. You need nitrous oxide or maybe those gases, and then you need some kind of monitors, heart monitor, breathing monitors, you know, and you have to anesthetize a person so that he doesn't die. But these people were doing anesthesia. Blood circulation, plastic surgery of nose, cautery, genetic disposition of diabetes, concept of genes is there in Vedas. Of course, modern surgical instruments. These are modern surgical instruments. These are the descriptions of surgical instruments in Vedas. See, it looks almost the same. This instrument, and this instrument. This is a pipette type, something funnel type. This is scissors, and here we have scissors, something. We have modern surgical instruments. Vedas mention around. What these kind of instruments are doing for ophthalmology, for gastroenterology. They were doing surgery, complex surgeries. Even today we do appendix operation, technique is Shushrut. Say this book. We do plastic surgery of nose, rhinoplasty, technique is coming from Shushrut. It was quite developed. It was not that people used to hold, 10 people used to hold that person, you know, he's shouting and then they're just torturing him. Things were there. It's just we are misinformed. Or we are not informed. It's ignorance or it's misinterpretation. Okay, this is good. This is excellent. You know allopathy? Modern medical system. Allopathy, all paths are coming from Ayurveda. Ayurveda mentions there are 24 types of medicine. 24 types of medical branches. One is Hetu Viprit Kari Vidya. Allopathy is a very small portion. Very small. Nobody used to. There are other 23 branches which modern science is completely unaware of. Completely unaware. Homeopathy is mentioned in Ayurveda, natural therapy, Ritucharya, alternative medicines. You know alternative medicine, acupressure and all these. It's coming from Ayurveda, Rastantra Samuchaya. Things are there. Okay, oh, this is good. This is about modern medicine, isn't it? Medicine, surgery, ENT, pediatrics, psychiatry, OBG, forensic, geriatrics. These are Sanskrit names. I went to libraries in Calcutta, in Delhi, in Bombay, in Madras. I got all these books, read them, did some research, and it's really amazing. I mean to say these concepts, what these Vedas are giving. The first statement of book of medicine in Vedas, you know what is the first statement? First statement is, we pray to people that the day should never come that when you will need our book. That's what is their prayer. They are praying you should never come to a point that you should need medicines and surgery. So these people believed in precaution. Modern system believes in treatment. It's a whole different perspective. Okay, philosophy. philosophy is there. Upanishads talk about philosophy. I'm just going to tell you the names. This is modern philosophy. Epistemology, ontology, logic, ethics, morality, aesthetics. This is about philosophy. And this is Vedic terms, contemporary Vedic terms. Nyaya, Sankhya, Tarka, Dharma, Sutra, Shastra. Psychology is there. You know him? Who is he? Emil knows? Oh, you don't recognize? Freud, yeah. Good. Sigmund Freud. He's the father of psychology because he brought this concept of subconscious mind, id, super id, super ego, all these things. Subconscious. And this concept is coming from Taittiriya Upanishad. Subconscious mind. It is there. I'm not going to go into details of this. But Veda says there is something conscious which we can access, subconscious which we cannot access. This is verse of Gita. In one verse, Gita is talking about all the diseases of mind. All psychiatry, psychology can be compressed in one verse of Vedas. This is the beauty of Gita and Vedas. This is Sapnam, Bhayam, Shokam, Vishadam, Madam. These are the diseases, isn't it? Delusion, Palonia, Depression, Mania. One verse talking about all the diseases. Vedas are, if you want to get one word for Vedas, that is Vinzip. They like to compress knowledge so that it can be transmitted and learned. Oh, this is good. You know this Oxford Dictionary? How much big it is? How many pages it has? No, not concise, but big one. Approximately 3,000 pages? Maybe big one. And this is Vedic Dictionary, which is called Nirukta. And this has 32 pages, that's all. 32 pages for entire Vedas. In 32 pages, we have all words, all synonyms, all antonyms, all the meanings of all the words. This is the beauty of Vedic Dictionary. How do you do that? How do you do that? Well, it cannot be done by human power. It has to be some divine revelation. It cannot be done. No human can make a dictionary like this. 32 pages and you get everything. For English, meaning dictionary, meaning dictionary is different for meanings. Synonyms, we have thesaurus. If you want thesaurus words, that's thesaurus. And for antonyms, you have different dictionary. You have thesaurus, but there's just everything in one dictionary. This is about language, rhetoric, syntax, word origin. In Sanskrit, we have alankar, karak, dhatu, kosh. You don't need to understand this. I'm just showing you how modern things were there in Vedic scriptures. Okay, computers, for computer people. This is Chomsky. You will be surprised too. This is Sanskrit. Chomsky is father of computer language. And he said, this is Wikipedia, 2013. He's always acknowledged his debt to Panini. Panini means Sanskrit, for his modern notion of explicit generative grammar. Anybody knows computer? He knows. There is some computer language, isn't it? We talk about production rules, such symbols, empty strings. Computer science is right coming from Sanskrit. Chomsky got inspiration from Sanskrit. It's there in Panini. Anybody who needs Panini, he'll be so surprised. Computer scientist, if you go through that, it's as it is. Tuck, 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 tuck. It's the translation of Sanskrit. That is the people were trying to actually code computer language in Sanskrit. They had a project, but they couldn't do it. It failed somehow. I don't know why, but it failed. These are some Sanskrit verses there, which are corresponding to the start symbols, empty strings. You know this voice recognition we speak? This is coming from branch of Veda Shiksha. These are talking about some rules. Architecture. You know this book, Vastu Shastra? It's talking about architecture. Modern architect people, they're referring to this book, Vastu Shastra. And how to make deities, how to make statues, all these buildings, colors, designs. Politics and MBA. These are the books, Chanakya Niti. It's talking about politics. Modern politics believes in power over people. Vedic politics believes in power over mind. Person who cannot control mind, he cannot control others. It's impossible. He'll ruin other people. That is why the duty of leaders, politicians and kings first was to control themselves. How can you expect somebody to control so many people if he can't control himself? Doesn't make sense. And that is the beauty of Vedic scriptures. Law. These are books, laws of Manu. We are talking about laws. Social conducts, personal behavior, punishments, all these things. Oh, civil criminal laws, ethics, punishment. Defense. This is good. This is a book from Atharved. These are some scientists doing research in Bangalore. They're talking about planes mentioned in Vedas. These are some layouts of planes. This is called Shakun Viman. You can see here, there's complex machinery. There are wings. And then you have this propelling system. There's fuel, Rukma Viman. There are wheels. This is all in Vedic scriptures, Vimanak Shastra. These scriptures are also talking about when you fly in what air, stratosphere, whatever level, what food you should keep, what suits you should wear, what kind of fuel you should... People nowadays use petrol, but people used to use mercury and sulfur that time. Modern people do not know the value of mercury and sulfur. But it's very important in Vedic. I don't know if they do research, you know. Mercury is so important. We use mercury just in thermometers, that's all. Not more than that. It's having a lot of energy in that. Agriculture. This book, Krishi Parashar, it talks about agriculture, water canal systems, preserving of seeds, and predicting weather. We have got modern weather departments, but it often makes wrong predictions. But these people used to make predictions just by looking up in the sky and looking on the ground. They've experienced. Civil engineering, these are complex shapes of buildings. Have you seen any building of this shape? No, isn't it? But these are shapes of buildings they used to make. And this kind of shape, you need real mathematics. How do you do this without proper mathematics? And also yajñas they used to make in these shapes. So this is one mathematician, George F. Uthibot. You can just Google him. He's doing research in this. Probably went to Calcutta. Mathematics in making in ancient India. Entertainment. Everybody likes entertainment. It's coming from Vedas. Natya Shastra. This book is talking about how to make films. There is a new branch, filmology. Started. Steady. And how to make films and dramas. It's right there from this book. This book is 2000 years back. And then how to write songs, poetry, how to write Mozart music, how to write that, what are the notions to write. That writing system is given in this book. How to translate, how to write that. That's important. These are writing systems. These are modern writing notions of music. And this is modern. This is Sanskrit. We also used to write music in Sanskrit. So it's almost the same, you know. You have lines. Instead of this, you have this. Instead of these circles and lines, you have this and this, up and down. It's almost the same. They've just made it a little in different thing. But point is, this system was there long back. This is about Western music. This is what is music about. Notes, pitch, scales, tempo, beat. This is there in Vedas. Okay, so I'm almost concluding. This is one theosophist. He's one professor. He's a philosopher. He's a politician. I took four people who are praising Vedas from different fields, who have understood that Vedas are having all knowledge is coming from Vedic scriptures. Vedas grasp every branch of knowledge. This I am quoting Westerners, not Indians. Not Indian scholars. They have also concluded the same. So you might ask me, if all knowledge is coming from Vedas, from India, and it went to West, how did it happen? And what happened to India? Where are Vedas in India? The question is, if we know history, there were these two universities, Takshila and Nalanda, everybody knows? In 6th century AD, they were famous universities. All knowledge was preserved there. When Muslims, they invaded these universities and they burned it, it was burning for 4 months. They had so many scriptures. And people used to come from Greece, from China, to all these universities to have knowledge. And then what happened? Muslims invaded those universities. And this knowledge went from these two universities to Baghdad, to Arabic countries. And they started translating Sanskrit into Arabic language. And then still you can have manuscripts written in Arabic language of Sanskrit in House of Wisdom, Toledo Library of Baghdad. They are still there. And then, you know about Crusades? Christian, Muslim, Islam fights, Crusades. So Christians invaded Muslims, that is the region. And the fight was mainly for Jerusalem. They're still fighting. And they stole all the books from Arabic countries to Greek, to Europe. And this happened from 14th century to 17th century. And when did science start? Just after 17th century, isn't it? Enlightenment. So, they got these books. All the scientists, they were having these manuscripts. They were looking, all these manuscripts were translated from Arabic to Greece. They had these ideas. And then they could get information from that. And they could form their own theories and come up with new ideas. And that was enlightenment of Europe. This is how knowledge traveled from India to West. So Francis Voltaire, he said, everything has come down. You know him, Voltaire? Everybody knows? He's a very famous guy in Europe. He was historian, philosopher. Everything has come down to us from the bank of Ganges. Ganges means there's a river in India where all saints live. And there they wrote Vedas thousands of years back. And this is excellent. But they forgot one thing. They took everything from India, you know, these invaders. But they forgot one thing. You know what? Can anybody tell what they forgot in India? Huh? What? Yeah. Hmm? Saints? They left saints? Okay, fine. They left the saints. What else did they leave? They took everything. But they left one very crucial thing. God. They left God. They left the conception of God in India. Because the whole outlook was materialistic. They couldn't understand. They couldn't question. Question is not that Vedas are having so much signs. Question is, why these books are having signs? If Vedas are supposed to talk about spirituality and God, why are they talking about so complex signs? Why? Because if these people were so intelligent and they had so much knowledge, definitely if they're talking about God, it's not just blind faith, not sentimentalism. There has to be some rationality behind existence of God and why to practice spirituality. They didn't question this because they were simply interested in money, matter, music, some philosophy, something like that. But they forgot this crucial point. And that is why Bhagavad Gita. Now, if you start reading Vedas, there's so many Vedas. So Bhagavad Gita compresses all knowledge into one book. That's the uniqueness of Bhagavad Gita. If you go to India, if you tell me one book, Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita will compress science, philosophy and spirituality in one book. And the beauty of Bhagavad Gita is less letters, more meaning, concise but precise. That's Bhagavad Gita. It's not religion. It is not mere sentimentalism. It is philosophy. It is rationality. So in one verse, Bhagavad Gita is talking about science, spiritual and God. Every verse. This is beauty of Vedas and Gita. It will not talk about, okay, now this is science, this is spirituality, this is philosophy. In one verse, we are talking many things simultaneously. For example, I showed you this verse, Gita. Nasato vidyate bhavo. This verse is talking about soul, body. This verse is talking about law of conservation of energy. This verse is also talking about multi-level organization in a body. This verse is also talking about mathematics. So, Bhagavad Gita is also talking about science. Bhagavad Gita is defining science. What is science? This is excellent definition of science. Science is to do with cause and effect. modern definition of science is observation, hypothesis, experimentation, theory. This is Francis Bacon, Baconian method. But Veda says, no, science is cause and effect. If you find anything causally linked with something, if you find any effect, there has to be some cause. This is what is science, isn't it? And if you find some cause, you predict some effect. And that's science. Just in one word, they summarize science. What is spirituality? You note this point. Bhagavad is not defining science in something abstract sense. Beautiful definition. What is spirituality? Bhagavad Gita doesn't say spirituality means Hinduism, Christianity, Islam. Bhagavad Gita says spirituality means changing your nature. You can do meditation, you can do any process, but if your nature doesn't change, that's not spirituality. If we are same person, if our habits do not change, if anxieties are not relieved, what we are doing spirituality? That's not spirituality. Any spiritual process should help you change your nature. That makes sense, no? You can be Muslim, you can be Christian, you can be Hindu, whatever you are, it doesn't matter, but you have to change your nature. And that will help you to become more happy and more satisfied. And Bhagavad Gita also defines virtues. What is divine? And chapter 16 is talking about virtues, morality. And then it synthesizes science, spirituality, and virtues in one. That is the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. First six chapters is talking about virtue. Second six chapters is talking about knowledge. And last six chapters are talking about knowledge. Second six chapters is talking about happiness. You can leave these words. Just skip these. First six is talking about virtues. Last six, 13 to 18, there are 18 chapters in Bhagavad Gita talking about knowledge. Middle six chapters, 7 to 12, about happiness. Bhagavad Gita synthesizes knowledge, science, spirituality, and morality. This is what is humanity, no? This is what is human. And it synthesizes it and then helps us to understand all these things are, the goal is to develop love of God. That is the goal of life. To love, to develop love for God, to understand God, to understand there's something beyond what you see. There's something beyond what you can think. Human cannot think everything. To say humans can conceive everything, that is definitely egocentric, isn't it? Today we know just 2% of cosmos. We know just 0.5% of oceans. How much we know? We even do not know how much we have to know. So this quest will never end. What's the purpose of this quest? The purpose of this quest is to combine everything to attain peace and satisfaction. That's what we want. We can't eat computers, we can't eat machines. We have to live happily. And that will happen when we synthesize these three things. Spirituality, science, and morality. And understand why we are doing this. What's the goal of life? And that is what is Bhagavad Gita all about. So thank you very much. Please read Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, yes. It doesn't, no. The word religion is itself not good word. It talks about dharma. It talks about God.
So Bhagavad Gita doesn't teach religion.
Yeah, fine. It's the name of God, yeah.
He spoke all the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand, yeah.
And Krishna is a God here now?
Yeah, according to Vedas, he is incarnation of God, yeah.
So Veda even teaches about God and religion, apart from his science?
No, religion means faith. Religion means faith. And religion, see, the word is abused now. It's used in a wrong sense.
Because humans did.
So if you want to use religion in a proper context, yes. But Bhagavad Gita talks about dharma. Dharma is little different, you know this word. Yeah. So it talks about God, our relationship to God, and why we have to establish that relationship. That is, if that is the definition of religion, yes. If your definition of religion is something blind faith, then no. Got my point? No, it's not written. I was telling all these rishis who were writing books, they were not written. Vedas were revealed, their revelations, according to our understanding, according to Vedas itself. If you see any book, if you want to know who has written that book, how will you know? You see the author? If you open Vedas, there's no author. And you can imagine, so long Vedas are coming, nobody questioned who is author. If people were so intelligent, no, there would have been debates. My God, why there's no name of author? Because Vedas themselves says, we have originated from the breath of God. They're revealed. They were given initially from God to rishis, and then it was passed down to us. And these people who wrote books, they took the knowledge which was at that time spoken and not written. They saw people's memory as reducing, so they just transcribed, they just wrote it in an understandable way, that's all. They didn't invent it. What my point? So they were not writers, they were compilers. They are not the writers. This knowledge was there previously, always. That is why our religion is, religion, if you want to use this term, it's called Sanatan Dharma. It's eternal. Vedas? Caste system? Oh, it's not there in Vedas. I'll tell you. It started 300 years back, or maybe some 400, with Brahmo Samaj, Arya Samaj and all these people. They were fighting against this. So even before that, Brahmanas, they were reading Vedas. But the point is, Vedas has two sections. One is Dharma, one is knowledge, Upanishads. So what these people did, these Brahmanas, they were just reading one section and avoiding the other section, Upanishads. Which is giving the basis why that is made. The why part is there, what part is there. So they were reading what to do. Okay, we are Brahmanas, Shudras, Vaishyas, Kshatriyas. Why we have to do this? They didn't understand. They forgot the logic. They became fanatic. And that's how caste system started.
So Vedas
Yeah, but who is a Brahmana? How do they define? They define a Brahmana as a person who is a gentleman, who has good qualities, who understands what is reality. He is a Brahmana. If he is born in a family of a Brahmana, if he doesn't understand this,
it is not by birth.
If a person is born in that family, if he doesn't have good behavior, if he doesn't understand reality, he is not a Brahmana. He is categorized under Shudra. So it is not by birth. This is later concoction. And that is why there were so many problems. So many people came, revolted, and that was okay. But Vedas are very scientific. Even now, Prabhupada says, division. Even now, Brahmanas are there. You all are Brahmanas. Intellectual people are Brahmanas who are on knowledge. People who are labor class, they are like all workers. It's always there. People who are military, they are Kshatriyas. People who are corporate sectors, they are all Vaishyas. You can't avoid the system. It has to be there. It will be there. But it should be taken in right spirit. Everybody should be respected. Not that he is low, he is high. Vedas, if you read Mahabharata, historical accounts, in Vedas, even a small person used to be respected as a Brahmana. It was not, this is concoction. They have made like that. It's not like that. You know why? This was mainly propagated by Britishers. It was inflamed by Britishers so that people get confused, they lose faith in Vedas and they fight among each other. Divide and rule. And then you create problems and then people forget everything. So my request is, please read Bhagavad Gita. Please take some books. We have got some books. Take that, read that. Understand Gita. Don't read Gita from a religious point of view. You'll miss the point. Read Gita from a point of philosophy, spirituality, morality, rationality. To know the aim of life. That's good. That's good. I'm just requesting. That's all.
One question I have is that Vedas have been passing on.
Prabhu, you can ask. We have books. My books, yeah.
It has been coming on from...
Time immemorial. Oh, it came 5,000 years back. Vyasadev, he wrote it. He compiled all the knowledge.
Before that it was
orally transmitted.
But even in Tamil nowadays, this thing, I heard people they pass from generation to generation.
Orally, no? Even now they do, yeah. Yeah, yeah, they are doing, but it's getting lost. That is why even Tamil, you have written things, people are writing. So Vyasadev, he saw in Kali Yuga, people will have computers, they will not have memory. So, what do you do? So he wrote it. Yeah, he compiled it. He's not a writer, he's a compiler. Because it's eternal. Orally, it was passing orally. Everything was passing orally. Can you just show me that? Yeah, my books, yeah. You have? Can I just show them and... Yeah, I just want to just tell them. Okay, first Bhagavad Gita, can you give me? So this is Bhagavad Gita. If you want to take, please take this. And this is translated in English. This is as it is. There are many Bhagavad Gita in markets, but the point is, there is no scientific explanation. So we get confused. We get a biased view. Whatever I was explaining, that's there in this book. You can understand this book from a perspective of a rational, logical person. So you can get this book. We have. And then I have also written a few books. This is maybe some devotional book. This is about mighty efforts. This is telling you how to do devotion, how to understand spirituality, and... maybe this is for devotees. It'll not. This is one book, Crazy Ideas, for crazy people. Maybe, I don't know. But crazy ideas means there are many misconceptions. Like you were asking, one misconception. Brahmanas, from where did Vedas come? What is the origin? All these questions I have put in this point. Why so many religions? Why so many scriptures? Everybody's fighting. Why should we be vegetarianism, non-veg? All these questions which we face. So all these questions are dealt here, and answers, I try to put some arguments for that. And then this book is there, Cheaters and the Cheated. I was talking about how politicians, how government, how historians, linguists, philosophers, even scientists, they are cheating us. And we are cheating ourselves also. How is that? Everything is explained in this book. And that's all. There are some Hindi books. There's one book, Perfection of Yoga, if you like to know about yoga. Yoga is famous here. There's one book, you can have this. So thank you very much for listening. And thank you to Professor also to give me an opportunity to speak here. Hare Krishna. Okay.